listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Here in Cleveland, Allstate agents don't wait for something bad to happen to do something good. They're out in our community every day making a better place for everyone. Are you in good hands? Nathan Zagura, Kevin Jones, and of course the great Andrew Gribble. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline now to welcome in one of our favorites, a proud Emory alum, Joel Corey, former NFL agent, now salary cap and contract expert for the National Football Post and of course CBS Sports. Joel, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing today?
It's great. Always a pleasure to have you on. It is franchise tag day. We'll get into that at large in a second. But the first deal that has fallen that's come in before the 4 o'clock deadline today for getting a long-term deal done before you have to play the season out on the franchise tag, Justin Houston, 6 years, $101 million. A lot of guarantee, 32 immediately, total potential 52 guaranteed. What did you think of that deal for the Kansas City Chiefs?
It's about where it should be. I didn't think they would go above J.J. Watt. It's just a hair above J.J. because J.J. was $100 million over six on his extension, and his guarantees were a shade under 52. The one thing I always thought was going to be an upper limit for Justin Houston on the average per year was Alex Smith at $17 million per year. They stuck to that, and the reason I say that is anytime you have a high-priced defender and a quarterback for lucrative contract, that's usually the ceiling for the defender. Even if the defender or non-quarterback is a much better player than the quarterback, you see that in Detroit. Matthew Stafford, highest-paid player by average salary. Calvin Johnson right behind him. Even in Miami, Ndamukong Suh, highest-paid non-quarterback, but Ryan Tannehill averages a little bit more, even though structure is superior.
Joel, let me ask you this about the Dez Bryant saga unfolding in Dallas, back and forth here. He's going on Twitter. There's different reports. In these types of situations in Dallas specifically, how much is the team or an organization worried about that video that may resurface about just issues with Dez Bryant that they don't want to commit the long-term money? That's why they want a franchise. What are you hearing about that situation?
I tend to think that that's one of their concerns, that they don't trust Dez because he's done everything you've ever asked him to do on the field and has seemingly stayed out of trouble where the head coach, at least past couple of years, where the head coach has been praising him about his newfound maturity. But anytime there's a curfew for a player where he's prohibited from going to certain types of establishments, then that tells you that the club has some reservations about him. Plus, there seems to be a new sheriff in town in Dallas that Stephen Jones has gained more control over how things are run from a business standpoint. And this isn't the old Dallas where they will just pass out a contract left and right and overpay players who don't necessarily deserve it. They're holding the line with Dez. They got a very team-friendly deal with Tyron Smith. They didn't go overboard and sign DeMarco Murray to an outlandish contract. So this newfound fiscal responsibility with Dallas is making Dez Bryant bear the brunt of it.
Well, Joel, we've been talking a lot about the wide receiver position as a whole and how, you know, it seems like now more than ever there's so many big-name wide receivers. Do you see the salaries for that position going up and matching what some of these elite cornerbacks do, or will the supply of these big-time wide receivers maybe give teams the leverage in these situations?
Well, historically, I'd always said when I was an agent that that's like a tandem position, that you could pretty much approximate what the highest-paid corner was going to make by the highest-paid wide receiver and vice versa. You've actually had the wide receiver market come down in the past couple of years because you had the two deals that NFL teams consider as outliers. Larry Fitzgerald was the first guy to hit $16 million a year, and that was set up from his first veteran deal, which was set up from being a top three pick. And then Calvin Johnson, I actually think he left money on the table, as strange as that may sound, considering he's averaging over $16 million a year. They had to do the deal when they did it in Detroit because if they let him play out the contract, his franchise tag would have been over $25 million. So I always say give him a blank check, a blank contract, let him fill out the numbers in Detroit, you sign it. those two deals are the outliers. You've got Mike Wallace below that, now second highest paid at $12 million per year, big gulf in between. And I think that's why you're having a problem with Demaryius and Dez, because nobody wants to go first. And what teams think is setting the market, because they throw Calvin Johnson's deal out of the equation, because the agent doesn't want to go first either, because contracts are made to be built upon. So whoever goes first is going to be last among the four guys that are considered comparable: A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Demaryius, and Dez.
Joel, take us inside the mindset of an agent or a player in this case, where both Demaryius Thomas and Dez Bryant saying they will hold out, they will miss the preseason, they will miss training camp, both, and Dez on his say saying he will miss regular season games. What leverage do they truly have at this point other than not being on the field? And is that enough to force a team to get a deal done with these guys? Because ultimately, are they really willing? I mean, would you be telling your player, are you really willing to sit out and skip out on, you know, an $800,000 a game paycheck?
No, I don't think any of these guys are willing to sit out, because you haven't seen any franchise players since the system change in 2006 miss paychecks. The closest anyone came was Dunter Robinson in 2009. He signed 4 days before the start of the regular season. I don't think anybody's sitting out any regular season games. Now, you have to threaten it and give the appearance you are. Even though you can't sign a long-term deal after the deadline at 4 p.m. today, one thing you can do, well, actually two things you can do, you're not locked into the tender. You're stuck on a one-year deal with your club, but theoretically you can negotiate your salary, a higher salary, or you can get a clause attached to your tender which prohibits the team from putting a franchise tag on you in 2016. Dallas made a tactical mistake with Greg Hardy's contract. They gratuitously gave him a clause where they can't franchise him next year. By doing that, they've opened the door for Dez Bryant to feel more justified in getting that type of clause, because if I'm the agent, the first thing I'm talking to the team about is, look, you want this guy to report on time? You do one of two things. You pay me more than the franchise tag on a one-year deal, or you give me this clause so you can't franchise me next year, and I'm there when camp opens at the end of the month. If not, if you're going to hold out, and franchise tag players have gotten in this new tradition where they protest the tag, or they either try to minimize the risk of injury and report by the third preseason game or around that time. We've seen that with Jarius Bird and Dwayne Bowe. They weren't asking for this clause I've been talking about. That would be my end game. Hold out to get the clause, because that way Dallas, I'm using Dez as the example more sure than Demaryius, has to at least at the end of the season, when they can negotiate with you again, put their best foot forward, because you'd be able to hit the open market. So it kind of changes the dynamics and the leverage equation if you get that clause.
Joel, you're a former agent. I got to know this. How hostile are these situations? Is this like Ari from Entourage? Are you on the phone yelling and screaming? Like, take us into what Dallas and Dez and Stephen Jones, like, how much communication is going on right now? Are they meeting? Is it on the phone? What is a typical situation like this like?
Well, some deals can be done in person. Some are done over the phone. It all depends on the actual styles of the parties. I would try to keep things professional and not lose my cool or yell and scream and only do that for effect. Because if you're not a yeller or screamer, and when you do go that route, it's taken more seriously. Now, I did have a team negotiator once early in my career when I was assisting one of my colleagues and doing all the prep and research, and we called to follow up on a proposal we'd sent over on a speakerphone call. The team negotiator said, "I got your proposal. You know what I think about your proposal? I wiped my butt with your proposal." So things can get a little contentious, and some things can be said that you don't expect. The thing is, after the dust settled in that particular situation, I went on and had a very good relationship with this particular guy.
So you're saying dust ups, that can be a good thing. You can build a relationship that way.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example of one other situation. I had a player holding out that was under contract. The team thought that it was really me and my colleague who were driving the holdout. So I set up a three-way call with the team negotiator, the player, and myself. And during the phone conversation, the player lost his temper and cursed out the team negotiator, and I hung up the phone and ordered the phone call. I thought that, oh boy, we really made a huge mistake. This thing's going to go south. Turns out that convinced the team negotiator that everything that I'd been telling him was really coming from the player, and it resulted in an increased offer.
I'm about to go to Kevin Griffin's office right now and scream in his face, I need more money. I need it.
Then we will have enjoyed your presence on this program and in the building. I don't think that's going to work for you, KJ. Just pump it. Go ahead, Gribbs.
Joel, there was a story last night that came out about the NFL Players Union moving ahead with collusion charges. Can you kind of just, if Dez Bryant and Demaryius Thomas don't sign these long-term contracts, can you just kind of explain to that what's going into that and why that might be happening?
Well, the supposed genesis of the collusion is that in this phone call that supposedly took place between Stephen Jones and Dez Bryant when he told him that I don't get a long-term deal, I'm not showing up. Stephen Jones supposedly said that, at least indicated to Dez Bryant, he'd been in communication and talked about the situation of his contract and compared notes with John Elway. That you can't do. That's a classic case of collusion. What you can do from a team side, and I've had team negotiators call me when I was an agent, which was they'll call agents they trust or respect or they've dealt with, and they'll ask them, what do you think the market should be? You can call someone from the other side. Agents can compare notes if they want to, but teams can't do that. I would be very surprised if John Elway and Stephen Jones were that cavalier or brazen to have a conversation like that and for Stephen Jones then to share it with Dez Bryant. The thing is, if you are able to prove collusion, which is a very high bar to do that, the collective bargaining agreement states that if it's the first time, then the damages will be twice the amount of whatever the injury is to the party. I'm assuming that the injury would be, in this case, the difference between the franchise tender and Calvin Johnson's deal. That's roughly $100 million. You double that, then that would be $200 million per player. And then the player would also have the option, if he had signed a long-term deal, because you could still allege collusion even if you signed a long-term deal, and it'd be the difference between your deal and Calvin Johnson's deal. Could cancel his contract, and also if collusion is proven, that would strip the ability for either of those two teams, Denver or Dallas, to franchise these players next year.
Talking with Joel Corey, NFL former NFL agent and now contract and negotiation specialist, salary cap specialist for the National Football Post and CBS Sports. Joel, when I look at this, I think Dez Bryant, I think they'll find a way to get that done. I wonder if Denver is a little hesitant to sink so much money into a receiver knowing that Peyton Manning maybe only has a year left. Does that factor into this type of an equation?
Possibly. That kind of cuts the other way. Also with Dez, does he really want to commit long-term to a team where he doesn't know who's going to be throwing him the ball?
Come on, he's got Brandon Whedon backing up Tony Romo.
Well, he's experienced the worst. Tim Tebow one time throw the ball to him. So he's gone from one end of the spectrum to the other. But Denver, if they really want Demaryius, they need to get the deal done, because the clause I was talking about prohibiting a franchise tag isn't as important for Dez, because he won't get franchised next year if it's a choice between Von Miller and Demaryius, because a pass rusher is always a more valuable commodity than a wide receiver. So he'll hit the open market. If Denver really wants Demaryius, they need to get the thing done now.
Joel, final question for me. And Pat Kerwin, your colleague over at CBS, put this out today. He said, in the last 4 years, 47 players have been tagged with the franchise tag. Only 11 are still with the team that tagged them. Four of the 11 are kickers. In the last 2 years of the 12 players tagged, only two remain with their current team. So my question is, and I know this was put in so that top teams could retain their top individual talent, is the franchise tag working, or has it created a situation where being slapped with the tag creates such animosity between the agent, player, and organization that it almost becomes prohibitive from retaining that talent?
Well, it's not a badge of honor to be franchised. Players are insulted, and it creates a divisive relationship because, for better or worse, they want to find out what they're worth on the open market. The franchise tag prevents you from doing that. Now, one thing that I would say about the franchise tag is it initially was not intended to be used on your best available free agent. When it was put into the 1993 collective bargaining agreement, the thinking was it was for your true franchise players, quarterbacks, but its type of use has been distorted. The problem is it's never going to be a bargaining priority for the NFLPA because it only affects a handful of players each year. In terms of a priority, trying to strip Roger Goodell's power or the next commissioner's power to be judge, jury, and executioner is going to be much higher on the totem pole than addressing a franchise tag.
Interesting. So if you're betting right now, what of the does Demaryius Thomas get done? Does Dez Bryant get done?
I don't think Dez gets done because I think it's going to come down to the structure of the contract, and Dallas is going to want a contract too team-friendly like Tyron Smith's. And he's got one of the best agents in the business, Tom Condon. And if Tom Condon is the one who's making the final decision, even though the agent works for the player, I mean the agent works for the player doesn't work for the agent. If Dez Bryant defers to Tom Condon and it's not a good, it's not at least a fair structure, and it's too team friendly, no deal.
Will be interesting to watch that deadline again, 4 p.m. Eastern today. Joel, we appreciate the time. Follow him on Twitter at Corey Joel, CorryJoel. Always a pleasure talking to you. Certainly an interesting day for what you do in terms of examining the contracts, et cetera, as Franchise Tag Day is here for the National Football League. Have a great day, Joel.
All right, you too. Thanks for having me.
All right, there we go, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting stuff about this situation, wide receivers, their value, will this get done, the timing of it, having to get done with a deadline. It's kind of like the home run derby. The clock is ticking right now on these teams.
Negotiation tactics, too. I mean, these weren't relative maybe to the wide receivers that we're talking about now, but you get yelling on the phone. He said it's worked in the past. I found that interesting.
I just feel smarter as a whole because this stuff is so complex. I mean,
And
it's so hard to, like, just talk as well as he does on this subject, kind of cleared up for us, like, you know, that aren't as into the numbers as others. I think it's as really good.
Very good stuff from Joel Corey. If you just joined us now, you can get that interview in its entirety on the Browns mobile app or at clevelandbrowns.com. Zagura Gribble and, of course, Kevin Jones with you here wrapping up our first hour when we return on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.